This week in KMA Land, no Kings protests sweep KMA Land. Glenwood District unveils renovated Building 103. Heitzik withdraws from Red Oaks Mayor's race. Pottawatomie County Supervisors hear pipeline project update, a roundtable discussion in Red Oak, and a special birthday celebration honoring a KMA Land icon. I'm Mike Peterson. Millions of Americans participated in No Kings Day rallies across the country last Saturday, including those in KMA Land.
We want
No Kings!
We want
No Kings!
We want
No Kings!
Residents in Red Oak, Shenandoah, and Clarinda joined individuals across the state and country protesting recent actions taken by the current Trump administration and the federal government. In Red Oak, protesters lined Broadway at Legion Park last Saturday morning. Rural Adams County resident and Adams County Democratic Party Chair Jackie Corden was among those in Red Oak helping organize the rally. Corden says Saturday's protests were about standing up for democracy and calling for lawmakers to represent their constituents.
About standing up for our fellow Iowans, for policies that support life in Iowa, especially for us here in Red Oak, rural Iowa. We're standing here for our hospital. We're standing for our farmers who are being hurt by Trump's tariffs. We're standing for Medicaid, for Medicare, for our people in nursing homes.
Gordon says some of her and other concerns are decisions made by the Trump administration to send National Guard troops into large cities across the country, cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and the various Affordable Care Act tax credits at the center of the negotiations related to the federal government shutdown, and tariffs on goods imported into the U.S. Red Oak resident Jennifer Horner feels protests such as the No Kings rallies are gaining supporters in areas such as Southwest Iowa.
And that's really great to see that people feel comfortable enough to come out and show the love for their country and talk about the way they would like their country to be going, and they're not particularly happy with the way it is with the current administration. There's a little bit of counter protest, but nothing major. It's just really great to see. We have people honking in support, it seems like, who are driving by. So it's just really good for us all to get together of all ages.
Residents also gathered in Shenandoah at the corner of U.S. Highway 59 and Sheridan Avenue. Glenda resident and Page County Democratic Party Chair Jennifer Harrington was among those helping organize rallies in both Clarinda and Shenandoah. Harrington tells KMA News that seeing National Guard members sent into U.S. cities hits close to home for her.
I have family in Chicago, and it's just really terrifying to think that, ICE could come into my grandson's school at a moment's notice. So what we're doing with no warrant arrests and no due process, it's unconstitutional, and it's really terrifying. So that's my big issue.
While unsure of the ultimate impact that rallies will have in a part of the state and country that President Trump carried handily during the 2024 presidential election, Harrington says the turnout at all of the peaceful demonstrations Saturday indicated more people are becoming willing to express their frustrations.
I see people here, I don't know, and in deep red Southwest Iowa, you know, people are afraid to let them know that they don't support this administration and the lawlessness, quite frankly, that's occurring. So this shows people that they're not alone. There's more of us that agree than disagree. And there's a lot of issues that both sides can agree on.
Harrington adds that around 85 people also gathered at a similar rally in Clarinda earlier in the day. Other No Kings rallies in Southwest Iowa took place in Creston, Council Bluffs, Oakland, and Atlantic. Glenwood School District residents gathered Sunday to celebrate the rebirth of a former Glenwood Resource Center facility. Glenwood school officials officially unveiled the renovated former GRC building facility with an open house, complete with tours, kids' activities, and refreshments. Glenwood School Superintendent Nicole Koiker extolled the virtues of the project, in which the building's first two floors were refurbished to house the Lakin Foundation Child Development Center formerly known as Kids Place. Quaker tells KMA News the remodeling increased the space for the program, serving children from birth to school age.
We are up to approximately 80, not all at the same time. Some are school age, so of course I go to school during the day, but different times of the day. So again, the goal is capacity is at 200. We've grown quite a bit in the past couple months. We had to get some more staff before we can get some more children, but now we're hiring more staff on and excited to bring in more students and families.
Rebecca Knight is the center's new director. Knight says the renovation created a welcoming space for the children served under the program, and those numbers are expected to grow in the future.
So with the renovation, we're hoping to bring in new families with our larger space, our cleaner floors, our walls, our new decorations. We're hoping that the bright new face of the building will attract more families, and it will make the building and the rooms feel more homey and like a place that they would like to have their children during the day.
Minor renovations were completed on the third floor, which contains the district's central office and its Thrive program, and on the fourth floor, which is leased by the Apex program. Ray Burke is co-director of Apex, which serves students in Glenwood and about a dozen other KMA land districts with special needs. Burke says the renovated space fits the program.
It's wonderful, and it gives us an opportunity to all be in one location where we can support each other as needed with any students who need some additional support from there.
Quaker says the renovations also included new heating and air conditioning and electrical services, among other infrastructure improvements. Quaker says that work was needed after the former GRC campus's utilities were turned off July 1st.
You know, out of the $3.5 million, HVAC, plumbing, electrical, Wi-Fi hooking up. I mean, everything, nothing would be working up at this building without having to run all of our own, because the power plant ran it just kind of like a military base. So everything was ran up here by all of those, like the power plant and the unit. So when that shut down, we had to be ready to continue to have heating and cooling and water and plumbing, like all the things.
Quaker hopes building 103's new life will help spur redevelopment in the campus's other vacant buildings.
I'm really excited about the Glenwood Redevelopment Committee also getting this developed, getting some housing and stuff up here. I believe that having our presence up on the hill will help them actually get it renovated, get housing, pull in some other families, develop Glenwood further, because again, it's a gorgeous space, a large space up here. So we're excited, thankful we can be up here, and hoping that it helps them also get other families to come into Glenwood.
Though most of the renovations are finished, Quaker says a few punch list items remain, including the installation of new signs and a new front door. You could call it an October surprise. A Red Oak mayoral candidate withdraws after making controversial statements at a recent community forum. In a statement emailed to KMA News last Friday afternoon, John Heitzig announced he's no longer a candidate for mayor, though it's too late to take his name off the November 4th city school election ballot. Heitzig announced his decision in the wake of comments made at a recent Mayor's Youth Advisory Council meeting with both mayoral and city council candidates. During the event, one of the final questions asked to the candidates was how they would plan to deal with the poverty and drug use in the community. In what appears to be the full unedited audio of the forum anonymously sent to KMA News and other local media outlets, Heitzig's response included a reference to mass extermination.
It's a cruel fact. People who went through drug abuse as teenagers, young people, when they have children, they do two things. They get them involved, and they steal from them. They've got that habit so bad that kid will go without before I go without. And it just escalates problems to where there's no reasonable fix-it solution other than mass extermination.
Heitzig also compared the problem to a neighborhood full of rabid cats.
If you got a neighborhood full of rabid cats, you go out and shoot them, then you don't have to worry about the rabid cats. But, you know, it's people become a little bit horrified when you talk about putting other people down. Life is life, born, gonna live, hopefully in a good way, then you're gonna die.
Heitzig added the situation is like a child who learns not to touch the stove because he knows it'll burn his fingers.
He learns by making mistakes. He learns not to touch the stove because he knows it'll burn his fingers. But if he's never given that opportunity to learn, he never will. And after a certain amount of time, it's too late to try to teach you.
In announcing his withdrawal, Heitzig stated, quote, I do want to apologize for what I said recently at the Mayor's Youth Advisory Council conversation with the candidates, as I truly did not intend to offend anyone. Local media outlets, including KMA, were not invited to the discussion held last Wednesday at the Red Oak Public Library. Representatives of a proposed carbon pipeline project continue to make their rounds across KMA land. Kaylee Gibson, stakeholder relations manager with Turnkey Solutions, updated the Pottawatomie County Board of Supervisors Tuesday on Summit Carbon Solutions' proposed Midwest Express CO2 pipeline project. Gibson outlined the company's community and landowner partnership program, which included provisions for emergency response and preparedness. Those provisions include $50,000 grants for counties located along the pipeline route, plus $1,000 per mile with pipe. In addition, she says the company will purchase emergency response equipment required for the CO2 pipeline.
At the bare minimum, CO2 monitors. CO2 monitors will be provided for all of the fire departments and police officers to have in their vehicle as well. And this is all written in our phase one permit. So the state, we committed to that, and then the state also said, we know you committed to it, but we're going to hold you to it and put it in your permit. You have to buy all necessary equipment, and that includes at a bare minimum those CO2 monitors.
Gibson says the project's timeline depends on whether the Iowa Utilities Commission approves an amendment to Summit's pipeline permit, which alters conditions regarding North Dakota and South Dakota. She says the company is exploring alternatives to passing through South Dakota, whose legislature approved a bill earlier this year prohibiting the use of eminent domain on carbon sequestration projects.
We are still looking for options to go to North Dakota. We're also, in our amendment that we submitted to the IUC, we've requested an upsize in pipe through Woodbury County where we enter into Nebraska in order to give us the opportunity to go west into Wyoming to sequester that CO2. So either North Dakota or Wyoming is that's where we're looking.
Gibson was asked whether Summit has given up on using eminent domain to acquire land for the pipeline. One supervisor stated he's 100% against eminent domain.
I understand, and it's a pain for everyone. It's a pain for you guys. It's a pain for us. I promise you it is. And obviously it's a pain for the landowner. So that's something we try to avoid. And what we found is when people will actually sit down and talk to us, we have success in coming to an agreement because we can truly negotiate on everything.
Summit officials are planning a series of open houses across the region next month to update the project. One such open house takes place November 10th at 11 a.m. at the McAlpine Center in Red Oak. Collaboration among school districts, city, county, and state governments is key to addressing declining enrollment and population in Red Oak and other parts of KMA land. That's the biggest takeaway from a community roundtable discussion Wednesday evening hosted by the Red Oak School District. School board members, along with school, city, and county officials, at least one state legislator, hospital and economic development officials were in attendance. In his opening remarks, Red Oak School Superintendent Ron Lorenz says that over the past decade, Red Oak has lost around 20 students a year. Last year, the superintendent says enrollment dropped by 87 students before another certified enrollment dip this year of 21 students.
That matters because in Iowa, funding follows the student. Every student who moves away, transfers, or opts for a different learning option, whether that's online, open enrollment, homeschool, private school, that represents a loss of funding that supports our teachers, our instructional programs, our activities. And that's a problem. Last year's decline alone cost $660,000.
State Senator Tom Shipley says the state has attempted to reduce the burden somewhat, including transportation funding for rural schools, which has brought roughly $1 million into his Senate district. But he adds that larger schools don't see as big of a benefit.
School districts like Red Oak and Clarinda, Atlantic, Shenandoah, Creston don't hardly get any of that because most of their school population is still in town. They don't have to run 400 miles or whatever every week to pick up kids. So that doesn't help them very much. We've also done some things with operational sharing money. There again, it's a kind of a complex formula. If you share with other school districts, you get extra money for it.
In terms of the burden that has grown for taxpayers, Montgomery County Memorial Hospital CEO Ron Claver says the issue also ties into the hospital, which receives some public funding, the school, the city, and county, making up roughly 50% of the county's GDP.
If you rewind 50 years, that was not the case. I mean, the GDP was factory industry, private industry, you know, even agriculture had a bigger portion of it. So, you know, this weight towards public sector being responsible for GDP is often associated with, you know, ultimate decline because the tax base can't support that much.
Amongst all the panelists and school board members, the consensus was that working collaboratively is key to bringing businesses, employees, families, and students back to the area. Several panelists indicated each entity could also improve its use of social media to promote the opportunities available in Red Oak and the surrounding community. From humble beginnings, one of KMA Land's favorite sons became a television legend. Johnny Carson was born in Corning on October 23, 1925. To celebrate what would have been the late entertainer's 100th birthday, residents held a special celebration Thursday at the Johnny Carson Birthplace Museum at 513th Street, featuring hamburgers cooked by the Adams County Cattlemen and music. The Southwest Valley High School Band filling in for Doc Severinsen in the NBC Orchestra. Also included were tours of the house where John William Carson was born a century ago to Ruth and Homer Kit Carson. Among the tour guides was Chris Nelson, who helped spearhead the house's renovation back in 2005, shortly after Carson's passing. Nelson tells KMA News the house was about to be sold. It was earmarked for demolition.
It was just a rental property house at that time, and this is 19 years ago when that happened. And when they said, well, that is the house that Johnny Carson was born in, I looked at them and said, hey, I'm in. You know, I can't think of anything else that is, what should I say, a wider reach around the world than Johnny Carson's birth in Corning, Iowa.
Nelson says thousands of dollars were spent to restore the residence to its appearance in the mid-1920s.
There was a historic architect that was hired by the committee to discover what the house was like in 1925 when Johnny Carson was born here. And the committee has spent about $300,000 to renovate it to that 1925 way that the house was.
Period furniture pieces decorate the house, along with pictures and other artifacts connected to Carson, who hosted NBC's Tonight Show for almost 30 years. Roger Sorensen is spokesperson for the museum. Though the museum is only open on Saturdays during the summer months and by appointment the rest of the year, Sorensen says the birthplace still draws tourists from all over.
We have busloads come here now and then. The neighbors around here, yesterday I was amazed. They said, the gal across the street said, there isn't a day goes by that somebody doesn't stop here and take pictures or something. And it would be nice if we could keep it totally staffed all day, but it's all volunteer help at this point. So this is where we're at.
Sorensen says it's important to preserve not only the house, but Carson's legacy for generations too young to remember the days when an Adams County native was king of late-night TV.
I think there's some people that don't quite realize the value of it, but then others, especially on our board and our local people, are supportive of it. And it's just a good thing to have in Southwest Iowa.
As Sorensen says, the best way to contribute to the museum is through donations or memberships to the Johnny Carson Birthplace Society. For information on donations or tours, call 641-322-4777. Lastly, an Atlantic-based barbecue competitive team recently earned high honors at a world-renowned championship invitational. A frequent flyer for the Shindig Barbecue Competition, Team Crawford BBQ competed in the Jack Daniel's World Championship Invitational Barbecue Contest in Kentucky earlier this month. After making the early 800-mile trek, the Atlantic-based team, headed by Roger Crawford, finished 35th overall and took home 6th place in the pork category. Speaking on KMA's Morning Jump recently, Crawford said the team started back in 2017 after his retirement, adding they have never looked back since. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMAland.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.